Welcome to Living with Dying, a podcast where we're going to talk about the unspeakable, everything to do with death and dying, and how to live with it. We're all on the same journey towards the end, but we just never talk about it. We don't like to think of our own life ending, and we certainly don't like to contemplate losing our nearest and dearest. So we all join in this huge conspiracy, pretending it won't happen to us. And then, when it does, we're often ill-prepared. So we're saying, let's talk about death. Let's open up the subject, and by listening to other people's stories, glean some advice and tips on how best to approach death, how to deal with loss, and how to rebuild a life after. I'm recording today's episode in the Thames Hospice again with Catherine Beer, who's their pastoral care worker. And we're recording this in the week before Christmas, so it seems appropriate, Catherine, I think, to talk about Christmas. I mean, I know not everybody in this country celebrates it, but you can't avoid it, can you? It is absolutely everywhere in the shops from about August onwards.
It is, absolutely, yeah.
And that must really be hard for some people.
I think it's really hard because it just is a constant reminder that you can't escape from, that Christmas is completely different because their loved one is not there, so that Christmas is not as they remember it happening. And so there's all sorts of thought processes around that, isn't there, about how do we do Christmas? Do we recognise it? Do we ignore it? Do we do it the same? I hear all sorts of quite difficult decisions that people make.
So everybody reacts differently, you're saying. Can you generalise at all and say that most people find it hard the first time round?
I think the first time round is utterly, utterly heartbreaking and painful. Utterly, even maybe for people for whom Christmas wasn't a big thing. Because there are some families who Christmas is just there, isn't it? But actually when you remove somebody who was just there, it turns that into the just their event very, very painful.
I can relate to that because last Christmas, which was my first Christmas alone, I remember very well getting all the decorations out, getting the lights, sorting the lights out, and all the time I was thinking to myself, I'm doing this with a very heavy heart.
Yeah, heavy heart's a really good way of describing it because there's such a sense of heaviness over your whole body when you're grieving because it's a physical impact as well as an emotional impact, I think, on our bodies.
But I did it, and I suppose I got through it. I do remember, though, laying a place for my husband at the table quite unwittingly. I mean, we were a family of 14, and I laid 14 places, and I didn't realise I had done until I noticed suddenly, discreetly, my son-in-law was sort of removing the place setting and taking the chair away, which was nice of him not to draw attention to it, I suppose. But I just felt so silly that I'd done that.
Did you? It's natural, though, isn't it? And it's a sign of learning to live differently. I think grieving is learning to live differently. And it's a learning journey that doesn't stop. And we're learning all the time.
That is so true. Mm-hmm. It's a big learning curve. And you don't know what to expect.
No. Even if somebody has experienced the death of someone already, when someone pivotal to your life, so for you, your husband, when your husband died, it was a whole new grief because you'd not done that before. You didn't know how to grieve, even if you've grieved for other people. And it's just so different, and there's no right or wrong, and there's no rule book.
I was just going to ask that. Why isn't there?
Wouldn't it make life a little easier?
It would.
Yeah. We say that to a lot of people here. I wish I had a rule book that I could give to the relatives that I support and say, you know, here you are. But there isn't. And that's what makes it so difficult.
I remember thinking, I don't know how to do this. I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. I don't know what I'm supposed to feel. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So yes, it would be helpful. But I mean, if you wrote a rule book, I imagine it would have to have all sorts of alternatives, because
Absolutely.
So many people do things so differently.
Absolutely. And I think also it would be enormous, because there is no right or wrong, so therefore you couldn't write a complete rule book.
So what in your experience has helped people through? Let's start with Christmas. Mm. We'll talk about all the other kinds of festivities, because there are so many in this country out there to go through. And there's the birthdays and the death anniversaries and all those. But let's stick with Christmas for now. What kind of things have people found helpful, would you say?
As they move through Christmas.
Mm.
So some things that people have said to me is that they have, are along with their sort of normal tree that they put up, they have, one person in particular told me that they had bought another miniature Christmas tree. And every year their plan was that that would go up in a particular place. And every year they would all buy a tree decoration to remember the person that had died. So that tree, the first year, obviously was a tree with one decoration on. And then over the years that has built up, and they have said that has been something that they've been able to focus on. Maybe it's something that they, that reminded them of that, of their loved one. So that's one thing that stuck in my mind from my supporting of relatives. Other things is the table. You mentioned the table already, Dilys, last year with your, just, it was a natural thing to set that place for him, wasn't it? Mm. So quite a few people have said to me that managing one of the things on Christmas Day was the food and being all together. And some people have said that they would still set a place and have a photograph of their loved one and a candle, because the candle being lit helps them feel that that person is, their spirit is alive, they're around them. And actually, candles can be quite powerful. A lot of people use candles in memories, in, you know, they will light a candle. It's quite a traditional religious thing, isn't it? To go into a church and light a candle in memory of somebody. And I can remember someone saying to me on a group once that I was running that they didn't always sit at the table. So this was somebody who'd lost a partner, and they found it really difficult to sit at the dinner table, because their children had grown up and left home. So they often sat in front of the telly. But every now and then, they made themselves sit at the table. And what they would do is put a candle on the placemat where their partner would sit. And they'd chat away. They'd talk to them. And they've said that actually helped them to sit at the table more often, which they thought was quite healthy for them to do, rather than having a, you know, TV dinner every night. So I think candles are really, really significant.
What about if there's a grave, in your experience, have people felt it's a good idea to go to visit the grave on Christmas Day?
It's quite mixed, actually. And I'm always surprised. I don't know why I should be surprised, in the amount of time I've done this job and the stories I've heard from people. Some people have it as a focal point of Christmas Day, and they go and they'll take flowers or a poinsettia. That's quite a significant thing for people to take. And they'll spend some time up there. A lot of people will also say to me, I don't go there normally during the year because I find it too painful. So I'm not going to go there on Christmas Day. I'm going to remember them in another way. And that's partly because people say, I just don't feel connected to my loved one at either the graveside or the place where the ashes have been interred. They say they're not there, so I'm not going to go there. Whereas I know lots of other people do feel a link to their loved one and do feel that they're there. So it's a really, when people are talking about graveside or not feeling connected, I often try and explore with them, where do you feel connected to your person? Where do you feel closest to them? And that gives, I mean, all a huge range of answers. Some people will say in the garden. Some people will say at the beach. There's a walk we used to do with the dog every day. I do that walk and that's where I feel connected. Some people will say, I just sit in the living room and have their photo with me, or I put their jumper on. So that's another thing, and people have said that's helped them a lot. some people said actually they do Christmas completely differently, especially the first time, might go away. Doesn't mean that they found there was less pain, but they were in a place where they felt they could be with their pain without being overwhelmed, if that makes sense. So that's another thing that people have said that they've done. Some people have gone out for lunch. A lot of the things people talk to me about is around Christmas food.
Is it?
Yeah, because eating together, it's that phrase, isn't it? Eating together, you're sharing laughter and jokes and banter. Christmas crackers, you're pulling them together. And people just feel that they want to eat a meal with their family, but they need to do it somewhere different. So they go out, go to a restaurant. And a lot of people have said that if they can get to the end of the day, then they've got, then they say that's, we did it. It wasn't easy. It was painful. But I think by acknowledging it's going to be painful is part of the process. Because you know it's going to be painful.
Mm.
And it's about owning it, isn't it? And I think sometimes we're not very good in this country about talking about death and dying and the pain that it causes us and the sorrow. And I think if we talk about it, get it out in the open and we own it, doesn't make it easier, doesn't make it go away, but it feels as if we're learning to live with it.
But that's interesting. That fascinates me because I can see myself sitting around the family table now and not wanting to bring the mood down.
Mm-hmm.
We all share the same sadness, obviously, mm-hmm. but we're all trying to get through the day in a cheerful way, aren't mm-hmm. we? So in a kind of a way, it might be better to pretend, I suppose, pretend we're not all suffering the same grief. Because if one of us then says, well, aren't we all missing Dad? Then that brings us all down, doesn't it? So that's a tricky one to work out what's best.
It is really tricky. And I think it just is indicative, isn't it, of how everyone manages it very differently. And I think, you know, the whole family is grieving the same person, but you're all individuals. And although you're grieving the same person, you all had a different relationship with that person. And so your grief is going to be different. And I don't know, I think it's okay to acknowledge that it's tough. It's okay to say, do you know what, I really miss whoever that person is that's not there. Wouldn't they have loved this? Or wouldn't they have loved, do you remember the time they did this? Do you remember the time they did that? And I think it's acknowledging and then bringing in a happy memory, because I think the laughter and tears have to sit side by side in grief. They are as valid as each other in grief.
And that's good, is it?
Very
to,
good.
To acknowledge both and kind of try and be with both on an occasion.
Right? I think so. I think, you know, and, you know, I speak from personal experience, having experienced the death of my father, who was the bedrock of the family. And I can remember the first Christmas after he died. We all got together on Boxing Day. I have three brothers. We all have partners. We all have children. So it was quite large. And we all had tears at some point, but we all had an incredible amount of laughter because we all said, Dad would have loved this. Wouldn't he have loved us all being together? But actually, do you remember when he said this? And do you remember when he said that? And that's what got us through, was because we were okay about saying, I'm just going to step out of the room because I'm struggling. Everyone else is laughing. That's okay.
And that's where families are good, because you can do that with your family.
Whereas, you can.
Because I think a lot of us find that other people outside the family tiptoe around the subject. They don't like to mention the person who's gone.
No.
And we do. We want to talk about them. We want to have that opportunity. So at least within the family, we can do that.
Absolutely. It validates that person. And it's an okay reminder that they existed. And they still exist in our hearts and in our lives and in our memories, don't they? It's very painful because they're not there as we actually would really want them to be, are they? And I think that's where it's so important to acknowledge death and dying as being a natural part of life. And it's sad that there are, people, as you say, people outside of the family sort of tiptoe around, don't quite know what to say. Or I won't say anything because I don't want to upset them. Actually, it's not going to upset me if you talk about my loved one because they're still very much part of our lives.
Only yesterday, a young friend of one of my sons put a message up on Instagram on the anniversary of his wife's very sad death, very young, saying, "Please don't think you needn't talk about Emily. I want you to talk about Emily because I don't want her to be forgotten."
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's a really good page that I follow on Facebook actually called The Hospice Heart. And there are some fantastic things that are shared on that. And actually, one thing that was shared a couple of days ago on that was about please keep talking about somebody, please keep acknowledging them, please say memories because, as was said, I don't want them to be forgotten because they shouldn't be.
No, absolutely. When they're such a big part of your life, you want to go on
Absolutely.
remembering them.
Absolutely.
So sticking with Christmas for a bit, although this could apply to any festivity, I realise, after someone dies, family dynamics change, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Do people
Very
find
much.
that a problem?
I think it causes huge problems for people because, and it goes sort of links in a little bit with what I was saying just now about grieving the same person, but being an individual in that. And your relationship with the person who's died was different. So I think people struggle to understand their other family members' grief because it's the same person. And I've often heard people say to me, well, they wanted to do X, Y, and Z. Well, that's not right, is it? And I was really cross with them. Why would they do that? That's not appropriate. But actually, you're talking from your own point of view, whereas the other person, it might have been appropriate for them. And so there re can really be some initial breakdowns in dynamics with family when there's a death. And I think that's not going to be permanent for a lot of people. It may be for some. I'm not, I'm not making a sweeping statement, but for some people, the grief is so raw that you just can't see outside of your own rawness to how someone else might be feeling. And that causes quite a lot of problems. I think it's very difficult to, not, it's not difficult to support. I think it's very much an individual situation that needs sort of looking at. Does that make sense? I'm not sure that that makes complete sense. So for example, I've heard before someone saying that another member of their family wanted to go into the house and clear everything. Clear all clothes, clear all the belongings, sort it, done, move on. And for the other person, that was like, oh, I can't manage you doing that. You're erasing that person because for them, the material things were a link. Whereas the other person, the material things were a raw reminder that that person wasn't there. And so there was a real sense of needing to come together to manage both of their needs because they were as valid as each other.
But that would be difficult to do. How did they manage it, I wonder?
Over time, and I think bereavement support from a bereavement counsellor can be vital. Not everyone wants to have bereavement support. That's absolutely fine. But for some people, it's a lifeline to managing their own grief, but also having an insight and an understanding into the way other people's grief will manifest itself.
And going back to families, I think it's hard for the senior person in the family, if you like, possibly the mother or the father who's lost a partner, to try and put themselves in the shoes of someone who's lost a father. Now, you've just described some situations where people manage or don't manage this, but I don't know how you're supposed to manage it as like I say, the senior person, because you are probably overwhelmed with your own grief, mm-hmm. and you may remember the death of your own parents, but it doesn't mean to say your children are going to go through exactly the same thing you went through, does
it? Absolutely.
So it's very hard to know how much support or how to give support, particularly when you're in that grieving place yourself, I think.
I think it's really hard, and I also think, again, I sort of reference back to my own experience of losing a parent. Our mum found it difficult to fully grieve in front of us, because as the parent figure, you're supposed to be there for your children, aren't you? Mm. And you're supposed to look after your children and help them and care for them. And I have not experienced that as a parent myself yet. You know, my partner is still with me and our children. And so I can't say that I understand that, because I've not stood in those shoes. But I remember what it was like, very difficult for her. But equally, as the children, we wanted to protect her. We wanted to look after her. And so it is okay. It is quite a juggle, isn't it? Grieving within a family.
And as I've said before, and I'm going to keep saying it because I think it's important, we're not very good at asking for the kind of help we want, are we? And why aren't we? Why don't we? Feel free to say, I would really love it if you did such and such.
Yeah, I agree with you. I also think that sometimes we don't know what we want.
True.
And also we don't know what we need. And it goes back, doesn't it, to saying, it's the first time you've been on this particular grief journey for a particular person. So actually, I don't know what I don't know. I know that for me, decision-making was, just couldn't do it in those first few months after my dad passed away. I didn't know. So people just made decisions for me. That was fine. I was totally happy with that. But for others, that might not work. There is no right or wrong. And it's how do you feel you can manage the day? How do you feel you can get through this day? And if the whole day seems far too big to try and manage, then break it down to an hour, 2 hours. Let's do the morning and then I'll manage the afternoon. And actually that mindset can be applied to managing anything, can't it? You know, talking about Christmas and special dates. For some, managing Christmas Day is just, oh my goodness, the whole thought of it overwhelms. So let's break it down. How will we manage the first couple of hours? Okay, so then let's have some ideas about how, you know, and breaking it down, I think sometimes people find that helpful and also almost freeing to know that you don't have to do things a certain way.
I think that's very good advice. And as you say, it applies to lots of other situations, doesn't it? Tackling things in small chunks often feels a lot easier. Well, we spent a lot of time talking about Christmas, but what about all these other festivals that other cultures have, and then the other anniversaries that we have to go through, like the death anniversary or the birthday of the person you've loved? They can also be just as hard, can't they?
Absolutely. I think any special date is going to be difficult. And it's interesting, when we look at this topic in the bereavement group that I helped to run here at the hospice, a lot of people will say, there are certain dates that to other people mean nothing, but to me, it's a poignant, pivotal date. So for example, the date we got the diagnosis, someone will say, I will remember that every year because my life changed on that day. And then it kept changing to the death and changed again. So it's also being aware that actually, there are people who will go through difficult dates that aren't traditional, if you see what I mean. And that's across the cultures, isn't it? You know, we have, and you've already referenced that, we have so many different festivities in this country that are acknowledged and recognised quite rightly in all the different cultures that we're lucky to have living in this country. And they recognise death and deal with it in very different ways. And so as part of the bereavement team here, it's we're learning all the time about how to support people, because it's right that we meet the needs of the person that we're dealing with, looking after, caring for. So it's important to be aware that for some, Christmas just won't feature, but another festivity will feature. And I think it's about learning, how do they want to manage that? How do they want to be supported through that? And what would work?
And you must have had experience, I imagine, of people being here before, during, and after Christmas, and dying on Christmas Day, or on a day during Diwali or some other festival. And that must be particularly hard for people, knowing that it's always going to be associated with the death of a loved one.
Absolutely, and that's what they say. Regardless of the festivity in one, I don't mean that in a demeaning way, but for everybody who experienced the death of somebody around a pivotal moment of time, i.e. Christmas, Diwali, another festivity, it will change that festivity forever. And we do always say here there's no hierarchy to grief, but it brings in another element, I think, for people who experience the death of someone around a particular time of year, particularly, I mean, we're talking a lot about Christmas, aren't we? But particularly around Christmas.
Which is supposed to be a happy occasion.
Absolutely. And you can't, as you said when we started this today, you just can't escape it. You know, it's on the radio, it's in the shops. You drive past schools and there's posters and all sorts of things. And, you know, you're right, we have had the sadness of people dying on Christmas Day, when it's Diwali, when it's Eid, and all sorts of other events over the year. And it's about meeting that person where they're at on that particular day, because it will change that day forever. But equally, I think what's as important to focus on is that ultimately their loved one's died. On whatever date that is, their loved one has died. And that's what's changed them.
And it's so final.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the big thing to get your head around when it happens. You don't know that until it's happened.
No.
And once it's happened, that kind of sort of springs up and hits you. That's it. They're gone.
And it's that, it's constant. It's every day when you wake up. Yeah. Yeah.
And you can't go back in time.
It's, no. No.
You're stuck there with
it. Yeah. And I think that's where bereavement support can be quite helpful, because it's helping you to reflect and to process and to... Sometimes people say to me, I feel like I'm wading through treacle. I just don't feel as if I'm moving anywhere. And you're navigating, aren't you, along a journey that you just don't know what's coming next.
Yes, you don't know what's around the corner at all in this treacle, in this massive morass of treacle.
Yeah, yeah.
What about the people, though, who are dying and are thinking that they might be dying on Christmas Day? Does that upset them, worry them on behalf of their relatives, or even on their own behalf?
That's a really interesting question. My hope would be that they are in such a place here of being pain-free and calm within their soul, that as that time is approaching, they are letting go of those fears. Because from a physical perspective, as someone is approaching the end, you know, both you and I, Dilys, have experienced being with somebody when they have died, and they are in that sleep-like state, so they're not going to really be aware of what day it is and what date it is. I think that will all have been processed before. And I have sat with people as they become more poorly and reflected with them, if it's near Christmas or another festivity that's important to them, about how that feels for them. And my experiences to date of that have been that they are the people who I've spent the time with have been in a place where they have accepted that that's what's happening and when it's happening. And they're grateful for the support that's being shown to their family and are reassured by their family that they will all be okay as things move forwards.
It's a lot to ask of someone who's dying, isn't it? To be thinking about other people, but I guess that's sort of human nature.
Yeah.
If you love people, you want to know they're going to be okay.
Yeah. And that's predominantly what I hear is from they're the one of the main fears and anxieties that a patient here will tell me. I'm worried about my family, not worried about myself. I'm worried about my family.
That's quite reassuring to hear, because that must
Yeah.
mean that people have reached a state of acceptance, and we would all want to think that would happen to us,
Yeah,
wouldn't we?
absolutely.
Fascinating. Thank you, Catherine,
Okay,
very much for
thank you.
talking to me today. I'm sure we'll be back for further chats in the
I
future.
hope so.
We'll be having more chats in future episodes about everything to do with death and dying, such as how to prepare for it, what it's really like when someone dies, how to talk about it, what kind of plans to make, how different cultures and faiths approach dying and bereavement, lots more around grief and loss, how to support others in their sadness, and my personal hobby horse, how to rebuild a life, a good life, after the loss of someone special. If you'd like to join us to talk about the death of someone near to you, if this episode has resonated with you and you have a story to share, or if you've been affected by some of the issues raised, please do get in touch at hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.